racing eventually will come back. We don't know when, but when it does, do you want to be 7 steps behind, or do you want to just be able to hop in like you haven't missed a beat? We have to kind of grind through, and then those who can are going to be really much better off for it when racing does return.
This is Running for Real, the podcast for runners who know that for every runner's high, there are just as many lows. All those just missed PRs, easy runs that feel hard, injury blues, and more. Each week, we'll talk to running, health, and wellness experts about their highs, lows, and best advice to build our confidence. Running for Real is about being honest, being brave, and most of all, not feeling alone. And now here's our host, Tina Muir.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to episode 219 of the Running for Real podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I am happy you are here. If you are a new listener, welcome. I'm excited to meet you, get to know you, and I really would love to get to know you if you are a new listener. If this is your 220th episode, thank you for being so loyal. I appreciate you so much. I'm excited today that I have this bonus episode that is coming with the one and only Desiree Linden. I have been trying to get Des for years, honestly, not trying as hard as I probably should have. I've kind of reached out and it hasn't worked out. I haven't been able to find a time, and then it's kind of just I've let it go and then kind of let it go, because I really, as you know by now, pride myself on asking questions that are unique and that are different and that are not the usual things that people want to talk about. So I never wanted to interview Des straight after one of those big wins, because it just felt like everyone be asking the same questions. So that's why I always held off, and then I just kind of lost it. So I apologize to those of you huge Des fans who have been asking for this for years and I haven't managed to do it, but today I think we're going to make up for it. I think you're going to really enjoy this one, and I'm excited to tell you about a bit more just a second. But first, if you missed the episode with Rich Roll on Friday, go listen to that one. Such a good episode. He does not do many interviews now. That one was really, really, really hard to get, and I'm so proud that I managed to get him on the show, because he does not do many interviews. So if you missed the one with Rich Roll on Friday, go back and listen to that one. I also have one coming on this Friday, which I'll tell you about after the episode, which I think is going to be really, really important, all about relationships, all about handling tough situations, which there's going to be plenty of for all of us right now. So I'll tell you about more about that later. But today I have Des on the show. We did not talk about Boston. We did not talk about the Olympics. We did not talk about any of the things that you usually would hear her be asked about. We talked about 2020. We talked about tough things. We talked about struggles that she's experienced. We talked about Des Toba and her thoughts when I ask her if she's considering an ultra marathon. You'll get to hear the answer to that. We talked about women in sport. We talked about a little bit. We touched on systemic racism. We talked about being comfortable in front of an audience. It just is a really good episode to get to know her, to really get to understand her thinking and just take a deeper dive into her brain. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think you will too. So without any further ado, we'll just go thank one of our sponsors and be right to the episode. Thank you to Generation UCAN for sponsoring this episode of the Running for Real podcast. Generation UCAN, I tell you about them over and over again because I love them. I am such a huge fan of this wonderful company. They have been so supportive of me, and they have just fitted into my life in every way. I eat one of the chocolate peanut butter bars every morning. I actually really enjoy it. You know, a lot of the time with those bars, you find that you're just kind of like jumping your way through it, not really enjoying it. That noise probably sounded horrible on audio. I apologize. But you end up not enjoying your bars. You're just kind of getting through them for the nutrition, but not with these. I love them. If I could eat them as 3 times a day, I would. They're my favorite. Chocolate peanut butter bars. I also like the salted peanut ones. And I love the cookies and cream protein shake. I drink that often, especially when I'm rushing around the house. I take I take Generation UCAN with me on my trail runs, and I just feel like I have a steady release of energy. It never gets a stomach upset. It's just wonderful. So if you have not already given Generation UCAN a try, this is the time to try. You will hear Des saying that kind of talking about nutrition is not her favorite area. But for me, Generation UCAN is the one thing that I do feel I can confidently say over and over again is wonderful for my nutrition, and I recommend it to everyone. So you can use code TinaMuir25 if you're a first-time customer. That's TinaMuir25. Or you can use TinaYouCan15 if you are a returning customer at generationyoucan.com. You will not regret it. I absolutely love it. Cookies and cream, the peanut butter bars, chocolate peanut butter bars, I should say. And I use the cranberry raspberry powder when I go on my trail runs, my long runs. I took it in my marathons. Just a huge fan of Generation YouCan. And I look forward to hearing what you think. Thank you so much to YouCan. Des, thank you so much for being here today on the Running For Real podcast. I am a little embarrassed that I've done over 200 episodes without having you on, but I am very excited that you are finally here. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for finally inviting me. I'm kidding. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited to do this.
I will actually say, you probably have no memory of this, but when you were in, you came to Kentucky to go to one of the bourbon factories, I think. I did come up to you in the store, but there was so much going on, and I was like, there's no way she's going to remember this. So that was actually probably a year and a half ago.
It was 2018. I do remember it. And Josh and I talked about it as we were scheduling this. Like, we have to get it done. We promised years ago.
Yeah. I've been pestering him behind the scenes a lot. So he's probably like, all right, leave me alone.
Stuff gets done.
Exactly. But as I said to you before, I like to do different things. So to the listeners, if you want me to ask about, if you want to know about Boston, if you want to know about all the usual things that Des talks about, there's 100 other episodes you can go listen to. This is not going to be that. I'm not asking her anything about Boston. I'm not asking her any of the usual questions. So sorry if that's the case, but there's so many other episodes you can go listen to. So we're going to go different here. Now, first, I want to give you some background. A few weeks ago, I had Colleen Quigley on my show, and I live in St. Louis. So I said, oh, St. Louis is a really underrated city. Tell someone listening about St. Louis why they'd want to go. And she just went the total opposite direction, saying that she wasn't a fan of St. Louis, that she was happy to be away. So with you, I feel like this is a safer bet. So I would love for you to tell people, as someone who lived in Michigan for 5 years, in Big Rapids, actually. So it wasn't, you know, right on the edge. I was right up there. I know Charlevoix. I've been up to Charlevoix. If you were to pitch Charlevoix to someone as a cool place to go visit, what would you say?
Oh my gosh. It's a hidden gem. I think I moved to Michigan from, I grew up in San Diego, went to school at Arizona State. So Michigan was a huge change. Lived in Rochester Hills, which was nice enough, great dirt road, you know, nice enough community. But I never felt like Michigan was home until I came up to Charlevoix. And you're on the Great Lakes, you're on Lake Michigan, and it's just this vast body of water. And that to me was like, okay, this is like, I feel a little bit closer to home just having that ocean type vastness in front of me, but it was obviously a fresh lake, which is a perk of the Great Lakes, having fresh water to go do your boating activities in and swim in and all of that good stuff. And honestly, people here are just super friendly. Like, I met my husband up here, and we can both be in the same conversation situation, like both experience something the exact same way. And maybe I have this like West Coast California mentality. I'll be like, that person was kind of like passive aggressive. And he's like, what are you talking about? We traded numbers and he was the nicest guy ever. And like, same situation. And he'll have just this complete positive outlook on it. And I just think it's like this Midwest nice that he has. And so I think that's pretty common around here. Yeah, I could go on about Charlevoix forever. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is really cool. And there is, I can't remember the name of the race. There's the Ryan Shea Mile, right? And then there's a 5K that goes along with it.
Drenth Memorial 5K. So that was actually my college coach's brother. And they do that. It's around the Venetian Festival. Festivals are big in the middle of the summer. It's great.
Mm-hmm. So if someone's looking for a race, that's one I would recommend. Are there any other big races? They have a marathon.
They do the Charlevoix Marathon, and then in Traverse City, which is like about an hour away, little airport there, the whole thing. It's kind of a bigger downtown. They do the Bay Shore, which is also a really great race.
Yeah. So there you go. You've made a pitch for Michigan. Now that on the other end of the spectrum, having lived in Big Rapids, and it's put me off living in snow for the rest of my life, despite I've said the story about when I arrived in America at age 18 and went to school, I was so giggly happy to be in the snow that I went running on the golf courses to be in the knee deep snow. This is the best thing ever. And then I left school 5 years later and I was like, I am done. But I do feel it gives you this edge of toughness and grit. So I would love for you to talk. Do you feel that the harshness of the winter and the humidity in the summer, do you either on a conscious level or on an unconscious level feel like that has given you a sense of toughness that you wouldn't otherwise have living in somewhere like California or somewhere with more mild temperatures?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I actually really enjoy the seasons and they're all temporary, right? You know what's coming in a couple weeks and in a month or so. So it's all pretty manageable. Like, we're going to get through this. We just have to make some adjustments. Maybe it's waking up earlier in the summer, hydrating more. They're little things, but you learn how to adapt to them and you learn that they're all temporary. And so I do think there's a lot of value in that, in preparing you for every race situation or anytime we're uncomfortable in a situation, you're like, okay, this has an endpoint. We just have to figure out how to adapt to get to that. The winter I have gotten soft on, because the one thing with the seasons that I dislike is ice. So it's all running in the snow all winter long. As soon as it gets that thick layer of ice underneath and you take one spill and crack your butt, you're like, okay, let's go south.
Oh, see, yeah, you do, I guess, leave for the toughest part of the winter. And that's necessary. I've shared many times that we would do our workouts in an industrial park with like semis driving around us, because it was the only place that was plowed and clear when it was icy and snowy. And yeah, so I understand that part. But do you draw on the seasons a lot when you're in races? Do you ever think to yourself, like, you know, I'm from Michigan, I know I'm tough, I have handled this, does that ever come into your consciousness?
Definitely. I mean, I think anytime, weather swings either way, hot or cold, it's like, I have done this before. And so I feel like it gives me an advantage. And not so much that I have an advantage, it's just that I think other people look at conditions and go, oh no, I'm not ready for this, or oh, this is going to be more difficult. And for me, it's like, well, I've done this before. I've definitely been in this scenario.
And so what would be your advice to someone listening who does have a tough weather condition, be it humid or cold or ice, or yeah, I guess let's stick to cold over ice, because ice is, like we said, just dangerous in general. What are some things you would tell people to remind themselves in those moments?
I mean, I think a big part of it is knowing that you're ahead if you can dress right for it. Like, that's like just planning for it. That's already an advantage. I mean, we warm up, you're going to be okay. Like, I've gone out in probably minus 30 with a wind chill and run for 12 miles and I didn't die. I'm here to tell the tale. so we're going to make it through, but also sometimes you have to pitch your original goal. Like, you have to adjust your expectations and, you know, what you think you can accomplish on the day. Be flexible with that, because if we stick to our rigid A game and it's, you know, C game conditions, well, that doesn't match anymore. So you do have to be flexible with your goal and not let that get in your head.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think that is a lot of it, isn't the mental side of things. And like you said, if you're dressing for the conditions, then you're going to be okay. And thank you for that. Okay. So going on into more kind of serious things, you've talked a lot about being an introvert, about thriving. I think I heard you on, I think it was Lindsay Hines' podcast, I'll Have Another, saying that you kind of thrive in this time because you're basically living the life you always were, and you don't need to be around people. Has that changed at all in you as 2020 has gone on, that you thought, wow, actually, I may be an introvert, but I still kind of miss the traveling, the connection, the meeting people? Or have you continued, you know, this is fine, I could do this forever?
Yeah, it's definitely starting to weigh on me where I'm like, I do miss, you know, feeling like, I think it's a sense of purpose, right? Like if I get on a plane and travel somewhere, it's for an event and there's, you know, kind of a goal built into that. And so that part is tough because you're like, well, I don't really have a job right now. Like I'm not actually getting anything done. Mm-hmm. So that part's tough. It is really nice to put your head down and train and just be in one location. But even that is kind of with an end goal in mind. You go, okay, we get to November 3rd and that's New York weekend. And then we kind of hit reset and go have some fun and be social and the whole thing. So it's like running the marathon, but not really knowing what mile we're at. And that's been tricky. That's been hard.
And what have you done to kind of come through that, to overcome that?
I think it's being flexible and being creative. And, you know, I took a break early and it was like, okay, we're going to start thinking long game. And so it's not just like get through this year. It's how do we plan for another 4 years? So the break was nice. And then slowly started building up mileage. And when that got a little bit boring, it was like, what's a new challenge that we can do? Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily have to be find a race or, you know, set up a time trial. And that's where kind of this mileage run Destober came in. And there's no other year that we can do a challenge like that. And the challenge was to run the mileage of the day of the month. So if it was the October 15th, you run 15 miles, October 27th miles, whatever. And so it was just different. Like you couldn't do that. And that kept it exciting and interesting and fun. And now we have some things to kind of look forward to that look more realistic. In the coming months.
Yeah. So tell us, let's talk about Destober before we go in any deeper with anything else. But so you just said about what it is, and you also gave people the option of, it doesn't have to be, you know, for a lot of people running almost 200 miles in that final week is going to be impossible, but you gave other people ways of joining in depending on where they're at. But what did you see from the engagement side of things? How many people joined in? Do you know how many people did the whole thing with you?
I don't have exact numbers. I guess if I were to do it all over, which I'm not going to, I have zero interest in that, but I would probably create like a sign up sheet so we could kind of like send out feelers and see who was doing what and how long they stuck with it. But it seemed like engagement was really good. I think there was probably in the teens maybe who did the whole, all the mileage, which wow. I thought was pretty incredible. Like I keep hearing stories, like a personal pop up on a different podcast or like shoot me a message and show me their training log for the month. And I'm like, I can't believe these people did the mileage. Like I struggled with it. And you know, I think I'm pretty good at running a lot of miles. So I found it really impressive. And then, you know, the lower tier, the different tiers, rather, I don't think it's lower, but there was kilometers. You go out and run it in kilometers or maybe in minutes, which if you're a new runner and you go out and you start at 1 minute and you build up to, you know, 27, 28, 29, 30 minutes, those last couple days, that's some good running. And all of a sudden you're set up for like, okay, now I'm in shape and I can actually create a routine that's a little more balanced, but build from this. And so it seemed like good engagement across the board. And I think people had a lot of fun with it. And even if they didn't, I did.
Yeah, no, it seemed to be the case. And how did you find that? You said it was tough. It was tough. But yeah, tell us about that final week. I mean, you know, running 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 miles. I mean, that's a lot. So did that surprise you how tough it was? Or was it easier than you thought?
It was routine. I think I got through like the week before I had like, you know, like every overuse injury is like right on the bubble, like tendonitis everywhere. And then I just managed to work through that. Like you slow down, you can kind of recover on the run. And you're, you know, doing recovery better. Like you get home and you're rolling and you're icing and you're doing things just better because you know what's in front of you. And then once I got over that hump, that last week was just like, okay, I know exactly what I need to do. So just check the box each day. And it just became like this routine where you didn't think about it. You just did it. probably the toughest part was that it was incredibly time consuming, you know, like we would drive out to go to a nice run. So that was different. And then that takes, you know, 20 minutes and then you do a 22 miler and that takes a while and then drive home. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got to run pretty soon.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. And just you forget how much, you know, taking up every day, 3 hours of your day to do a run that it really doesn't leave you that with that much time, especially in the winter when it gets dark so early. It just makes the day feel so much shorter. So I absolutely see that. And did any part of you feel intimidated putting something on like that? Like, did any part of you worry, like, what if no one joins, or what if everyone is like, oh, stop it? Or did you not fear about that?
I think for me, I was going to do it no matter what. My husband and I just were like, this sounds fun. So I hoped people would join, and Brooks did a really great job of kind of rallying their troops to follow along and sharing it on their social, which was a huge help. I think if there was any fear, it was like, well, what if I don't finish? Like, how embarrassing is that going to be, to be like, oh, sorry guys, I had to abandon. But there's also the human side to that too, where you go, sometimes you get in the deep end and you can't swim and you need to get out and get some help first. So it was kind of fun to put it out there and just go, we're going to try, and this is unknown territory and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually have to remind myself of that quite a lot, that, you know, I might say that I'm going to do something and then I can't do it. And at first I think, oh, I don't want to say that I couldn't do it when I told everyone I was going to do it. But then I remember that actually, for the average person listening, someone like, especially you or myself, saying, I cut, you know, I was meant to do 10 of these and I did 9, is actually people like, oh, actually, wow, they're human beings. They're not superhuman. So I think that's good that you mentioned that was kind of a fear of yours, because I think that's probably something that most people wouldn't think would be. And it's always good to admit that you also have fears and struggles too. So thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I have to ask, a lot of people have been asking me, when is the ultra coming on the agenda? That's the one thing people keep asking me. They're like, this surely points to ultras for her.
It was, I do feel like that. I was talking a lot about it at the end of the month, like, well, maybe we can do something like this or that. I think we're going to see how the schedule shakes out. But if anything, it would be sooner rather than later after that month, because I felt just really great coming off of it. So I think I can handle the volume, but, you know, at the pace and find out. I think it'll be soonish, but it's going to happen. It will happen.
So would you go off the deep end and go for like a 50 mile, or do you think you would just gradually edge your way out there and do 50K first?
Probably 50K first. Okay. It's still much like the end of the month. Like, the idea of a Comrades or something is really appealing, but it just seems too big to tackle like immediately. So it probably starts small and inch by
inch. Do you think 100 miler would be a lifetime or potential in the future?
I don't know if I could get to 100 miler. That might be like the breaking point. I don't know. But you know what? My track record is this. When I was a young kid, it was like, you need to be running the 5K. I'm like, no, I'm a miler. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got to college. You're in the 5K. Like, coach is like, you actually should be in the 10K. No, coach. And then I graduated professional. You're actually going to be a marathon. Never doing that distance. No way too far. Those people are insane. So who am I to say I won't do 100 miler? We'll find out.
I know. I find that a lot of the ultra runners that I have on the podcast always say, yeah, I think I could do a 50, but then 100, it's just, I just can't wrap my brain around it. And they're like, well, we'll see. And and usually with most people, they end up being right. So I definitely think somewhere down the road, that's going to happen for you as well. And yeah, it's pretty exciting to think about. So going back to kind of the 2020 and things, you're also, do you feel like you've become more comfortable kind of popping on Instagram and being like talking, you know, on video, hey, you know, doing the other side of running, whereas before it was very much performance, performance, performance. And yes, you had like events you had to show up at. But do you feel this has honed in a bit more on your ability to speak in front of a camera and just kind of do things in a very real fashion rather than set up?
No, I wish it had. I'll never be the person who turns on like selfie mode and can just like, you know, talk to people about what I'm doing. Not so much that I can't share what I'm doing. It just feels to me like it still just feels a little strange to think that people will actually care. And so, like, hey, I'm going out for a run today. You want to watch me? Like, no, nobody wants to watch that.
But the weird thing is, and you know it deep down, that people actually do love stuff like that, like being able to watch someone or be alongside someone. Which do you ever get used to that part of knowing that people are so invested in what you're doing that you could say, I'm going to run in Charlevoix at this park, and you'd probably have 100 people show up to go watch you?
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. I mean, I don't know that I get used to it, but I appreciate it. You know, I think that like, it's not lost on me that at the end of that month, it was people really just being invested in someone running mileage, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of cool when you're really trying to sell the sport and the activity and close that gap. And you're like, people just wanted to see the updates on my mileage every day. That's pretty wild. And I appreciate that. I think that I'll never really get used to it because it's just an odd thing to me, but I do appreciate people being invested in it. I think that's the goal really for us, is to have people care about running.
yeah. And I think this year you know, it hasn't brought on too many good things, but I think a lot of people have taken up running this year, and hopefully will continue to do so. And you know, I'm sure some of those were a part of Destober, and it has kicked it into a habit for them doing it every day. So I think there are some silver linings coming out of this year. And what else has this year of not being such a focus on performance all the time taught you about running and just being in the sport in general?
Yeah, it's definitely for me like a process year. You know, we talk about love the process, and usually that's with the end goal in mind. I've always been someone who, like, I don't really enjoy regular runs. They're just sort of filler till the next workout, or like, yes, I have to do this because this gets me ready for the race. But like going out and running 10 miles in the morning and 4 in the afternoon is like, oh, gosh, I just want to get home and do like stuff I want to do. It's like a task. And I think this year's kind of made me slow down and go like, hey, why don't you just enjoy your time on the road? What are you really hustling back for? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing that will allow me to go from athlete with performances front of mind. And, you know, hopefully when I retire and get to the point where I'm just a lifelong runner for the love of the process of running, like getting out the door and sweating and that stuff. So I think that year I've been able to, in that way, I've been able to appreciate this year.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought more about whys and having accomplished all the things you have? It can't just be about result. Have you thought more about what running does mean to you at its core?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. To me, sometimes I just look at it, and because I guess cause I'm still pretty in it, it's just like this habit. It's like kind of a habit where I'm like, okay, I feel sort of, I described it on Twitter or Instagram or somewhere, like as brushing my teeth, where it's like, you know, you don't think about it. You just get up in the morning and brush your teeth, and then you start your day, because if you didn't, you would just not feel right all day. It's kind of off. Right. And that's how running is for me now. I think I'll maybe enjoy it more. That's not true. I guess the other thing it really does for me is gives me time with my husband, Ryan.
Yeah.
Like we run every day together pretty much, and we both work from home. We're around each other, but we're kind of like having our own space and avoiding each other during the day so we can do our work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we have the time where we run and we can kind of talk about everything, or during Destober, we like totally irritated each other and fought for like half of the month, and then like rallied and we're like, okay, we're in this together, and like we're best teammates the end of the month and the whole thing. So I love that part of it. I think that's always it's kind of a relationship therapy, and then when you're on your own, it's your own like individual therapy as well. So there's those parts too.
Thank you to Bumble Red for sponsoring this episode of the Running For Real podcast. Yes, you heard that right. I know many of you are Bumble Red fans, and it's easy to see why. I'd heard of the brand. I love them. And I could not believe my luck when they reached out to me to talk to me about their products. At the time when they first reached out, I already had some strollers and I like them, but I have to tell you, I love these Bumble Ride strollers. We have got ourselves a double stroller, which I said I would never buy. But yes, I've become one of the members of that club who have a double stroller. And we also, I'm absolutely loving their running stroller, which is just so good. It's so smooth. I really enjoy it. So I want to tell you a bit about the features of the Bumble Ride Speed, which is their jogging stroller. It features this 3 front wheel lock modes, which includes this partial swivel for jogging and steering or running and steering at the same time. I find that really helpful because I do like to be able to have some movement. I know some people say you should always have it locked 100%, but I do actually prefer to have some movement to be able to move around the roads a little bit easier. They have all-wheel suspension and air-filled tires. They have a large sun canopy with this extension, so it goes all the way over them if you want them to. It's really well designed. And that is one of my biggest frustrations with a lot of running strollers, is that they haven't thought through the sun canopy very well and how children do not generally like to have the sun in their eyes. So that's just really well thought out there. And ready for the parts that I love. The fabric is made with 100% recycled plastic water bottles. How cool is that? I love that they are thinking about the environment. I was just beyond excited to know that I was working with a sustainable company. They're also PFC free, which means they're also durable and water repellent. And 25% of the frame plastic is made from recycled sea nets, which is just so cool. You can check out more about Bumble Ride by going to bumbleride.com. And if you want to get the specific for this running stroller, it is at bumbleride.com/products/speed. I will put a link in the show notes so you can go straight there to go straight to the Bumble Ride Speed running stroller. I absolutely love it. Check out Bumble Ride if you are in need of a new stroller or a running stroller. I'm just so excited to be working with this company. I feel so good about them. And I love their phrase, which is Bumble Ride, the ride of your life.
The other thing it really does for me is gives me time with my husband, Ryan.
Yeah.
Like we run every day together pretty much, and we both work from home. We're around each other, but we're kind of like having our own space and avoiding each other during the day so we can do our work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we have the time where we run and we can kind of talk about everything, or during Destober, we like totally irritated each other and fought for like half of the month and then like rallied and we're like, okay, we're in this together. And like, we're best teammates the end of the month and the whole thing. So I love that part of it. I think that's always, it's kind of a relationship therapy. And then when you're on your own, it's your own like individual therapy as well. So
yeah,
there's those parts too.
I think someone said, and I cannot remember who it was, about how, running is just a special thing where it's like you're telling your secrets to the wind. And, because you're running alongside each other, you don't have to look in each other's eyes, but you can just talk. But I think with couples, being able to run with my husband, not that much anymore, but being able to run with him sometimes, it does feel like, yeah, sometimes you end up in arguments, but sometimes you end up just having these conversations that you would never have at home because you're just out there doing this together. And it just is a special moment. So it's kind of cool to hear you say that, and good to hear you say that you had to work through some things as well. I think most running couples will have experienced that at some point. And did you ever struggle with motivation this year to get out the door without a race on the agenda?
Totally. I mean, I think Boston was always kind of out there. And then once they formally canceled that, I was like, I'm taking a month off, because it was almost like I knew, like, there's not going to be anything for a long time. I know I'm going to have that struggle. So I'm just going to get out in front of it and let my body heal. So we tried to, you know, put that out front. And then there was a couple months where you're coming back and getting in shape and you're like, oh, I shouldn't have taken that month off. This is really hard. And then there's still no race out there. So you're like, why am I suffering through this and getting in shape for nothing? And then we kind of dropped Destober and was like, well, you can't be starting from zero.
And for someone who is struggling with motivation themselves and getting out the door, do you have anything, you know, that there is that thing of you just need to get out the door and then you'll feel good. You'll feel okay once you get going, but anything else that has worked for you that someone might not have tried yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing for me is like the why, you know, and I know it's such a cliche, but what got you started? Like, what was the thing that got you to buy your running shoes and kit yourself out? And, you know, there was something behind that. And I think we have to really remember like why we got started. And, you know, that kind of adjusts and changes. But I don't think it was like, well, I want to go win a race or I want to set a PR. It's like there was something else in that motivation. And just remember that. And sometimes I think it's even writing down that goal or that why and putting it somewhere that's visible. So it's this little bit of accountability that we have that's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to see that and I'm going to remember and, and then I'm going to feel bad if I don't get out and get started. So just that extra nudge.
For sure. And what about someone who says, yeah, but my goal was always, you know, I was going to run the New York Marathon and virtual just isn't doing it, or we don't know when races are going to be, like, I don't know what to put on my goal, my why, when it was racing and now that's been kind of taken away from me. Anything you'd say there?
I mean, I guess I would remind them that racing eventually will come back. You know, I think we don't know when, but when it does, do you want to be seven steps behind or do you want to just be able to hop in like you haven't missed a beat? And so that's, you know, the kind of the, it's the hard work that we sometimes get stuck in the middle of a marathon segment and you're like, this is miserable. I don't know if I can make it to the end and maybe I'll shift my goal, but we push through anyways because we know what's out there. And it's just, we're kind of in this the tough spot right now where we have to kind of grind through. And then if we do, and those who can are going to be really much better off for it when racing does return, they're just going to be so many steps ahead.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's definitely good practice. And it's interesting, the virtual races have, virtual races or in-person races have become essentially a time trial. So it's really interesting to see how people are approaching this. Because if you really are in shape and you really want this and you're focused, this time trial is ideal. You don't have to run. I mean, you obviously, and when I was running at my best, weren't zigzagging around people. But for the average person, you don't have to weave in and out of people. You don't have to worry about, oh, there's no way I can use this tangent because there's no one in your way or few people in your way. So it can be an advantage going into these virtual races or these in-person spaced out races. But how has your experience been of that? I mean, I know the virtual marathon, New York City Marathon, was part of Des Toba, so you had that as a motivation. But how did you experience it doing it virtually rather than in this big mass setting, especially in New York?
Yeah, it was strange. It was different. I did the 5K prior, so they're kind of rolling out, you know, these in-person 5Ks and you have your time slot that you sign up for, and then they start people every 10 seconds. And to me, I think there's just a deep sense of gratitude. Like, these people are getting really creative. The roadrunners have come up with this kind of way to work in a system that says we can't have large group gatherings, but if we do it this way, we can allow you to run. And so the fact that we're even able to put on bibs and go through a start line comes from a lot of hard work from an organization. Like, we want this opportunity for people. So there's gratitude there for sure. And then you just try to find the upside. Like, okay, now all of a sudden there's people like just layered out for me to chase down. Yeah. You know, it's like little carrots along the way. And you just, again, it's all about being creative and figuring out how to make it work for you. But I think there's ways to make it a positive experience for everyone. And so that for me was like, yes, I miss the old way. I wish we were in groups. I wish, you know, there was fans everywhere, but this is a great first step. This is better than it's been for a long time now. And we are crossing finish lines, and that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you think you will do okay? How much does the crowd play a part in your race when you're out there hearing your name being called?
I mean, it's like the best part of the big city marathons. I think it's such a thrill to run through those towns and just have people care so much about what's going on between the curbs. And that's super neat. I think that will be hard, assuming they bring back these major races, but it's a without fans situation. I think I heard Sarah Hall kind of comment on her London experience and it was like, it was really a challenge to just solo it. But when I think about it, it's like, that's how we do most of our work. You know, it's like no one's coming out to watch my practices in Charlevoix. So it certainly can be done. You just have to be a little bit more mentally tough. And I think it's something to consider while you're out training. Like, okay, this is what it's going to be like. This is how it's going to translate.
Mm-hmm. And also like perspective. I think people have to mentally prepare for the crowds not being there. I think that was why when I did a half marathon a few weeks ago, I struggled because I hadn't mentally prepared myself that there weren't really going to be people lining the course. And so, but if you go into it, like you said, looking at it from the perspective of, well, I do this at home, so I know I can do this now, instead of looking at it as a loss of, oh, we've lost the crowds. It's looking at your perspective. And how are you preparing for 21 yourself mentally with this unknown of what races are going to look like?
Yeah, I think right now it's kind of freshened up from Destober. Put a half marathon in the schedule for December. So it's kind of like, all right, let's just dip your toes in the water, see where we're at. But we really have kind of a long, there's no timeline on when I need to be ready. I think probably be targeting really next summer, fall for, and keeping the fingers crossed that things will be normal. So I think things will kind of, we'll hope that things will build quickly over the next month or two. And then, you know, tracks available for the pros, which has been really great. I think it's a great way to kind of be able to race and definitely be socially distanced. And we don't need the crowds and all of that for tracks. So I think that might be a good option. And then just keeping the fingers crossed that summer, fall look semi-normal.
Mm-hmm. And do you, so you anticipate going to the US trials for maybe the 10K?
I think I'll probably try and get a mark, you know, and see if I can get in them.
it's been a while since
I've been on the track. So we'll see if I can do it. But it's the goal to have on the calendar for sure. Okay. So
cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. Then have you changed anything in the way that you have viewed? I know we talked about this a little bit in in-person meetups and you missing that, but has the way you view the running community changed in any way in 2020?
Not really, to be honest. I feel like we've all known we're very resilient. It's kind of intrinsic in what we're doing. I think, you know, we saw what happened in Boston post bombings, and it's just a community that's like, let's group up and figure this out and be better for it. Let's find the lessons instead of just feel sorry for ourselves. And, you know, that's the best of the community, but there's honestly not a ton of bad in our community. We have really great people that make races happen and that participate in them. So I think it definitely reinforced that idea. And I think, you know, watching people get creative with races and do their virtual marathons on their own, which is insane. I mean, like watching the Boston stuff and the New York stuff, people, it's important to them and they're going to boost the community and help it survive until this can kind of go back to normal. So I don't think I learned anything new, but it did reinforce what I believed about the community.
Yeah, that's really cool. Does any part of you ever, I mean, I guess this year being in Charlevoix most of the year has given you a break, but does any part of you get fed up of being in the public eye, knowing that people could be anywhere and everywhere seeing you, watching you? Do you ever struggle with that?
I mean, I guess to a degree it keeps you on your toes, like, hey, don't do anything stupid, but I probably shouldn't be doing anything stupid anyways. So, and I think I try to just behave how the standard I have for myself. And I don't really worry about if anybody sees it or not, because hopefully it's all good.
You mean you don't have some secret hobby that no one's discovered yet? Sneaking around.
No, that's right. I'm not in a Dungeons and Dragons club.
Yeah. Well, I was envisioning you like, yeah, being someone who goes to a nightclub and is out till 4 a.m. and someone's going to see you come out one day. No. Is there a question ever that you get asked a lot by either interviews or just around in public that you really struggle to answer? Or you don't like answering?
This is super weird, but I don't like talking about nutrition because I feel like it's such a personal decision, and like everyone has their things. And I feel like one comment about nutrition that works for you could lead someone else on a very strange path. And like, that's totally misinterpreted. And so I just feel like I'm so unqualified to talk about nutrition, and I'm very conscious of how it could change someone's perception about food. And so that to me is always like, I don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely right. I actually made a nutrition series on my website a few years ago where I interviewed these experts in the nutrition field. And I've actually since removed that from my website because I had six experts and each of them was so different that I feel people wanted it because they were like, this will give me the answer. And it actually made people feel more confused because they came out of it and they were like, there's no answer. And that was supposed to be the whole point, but I think it ended up confusing people because, we all want like you do this and this will work for you. So, but there is no set answer. So thank you for saying that. And that's funny actually, because when I Googled your name, one of the questions that most people, because it shows you the three things that are asked the most, one of them is, what does Des eat? So you're right, that totally. That is obviously a question you get asked most. And that can lead into something that I was hoping, if I was brave enough to ask you, I would ask you. And that is, I've been addressing a lot of the systemic racism that is going on in our country right now. And another of the questions that was up there is, what is Des Linden's ethnicity? And I wanted to ask you, you know, that whole where are you from question is just, you know, people are learning that that's not what you should ask people. That's really rude. And but that being said, have you personally struggled with aspects of microaggressions or people kind of assuming things about you in your life? Has that been something you've been aware of?
I think I'm kind of aloof to it. Not saying that it hasn't happened. It's just lost on me. I'm Mexican, by the way, grew up in San Diego. So I guess it's like, there's times where it's like, you'll get mail in Spanish. And, you know, I remember my parents being very agitated by that. Like, why is my mail coming in Spanish? So little things like that, but I kind of feel like it's always just rolled off my back. It's never been a thing where I feel like has bothered me, but I do understand that as well. It's like, oh yeah, that I understand why getting mail in Spanish is not fair for someone whose last name is Davila, but has, you know, works at AT&T or whatever. It's like, I've been here for my whole life, generations. So
has this time understand that. Made you reflect on more things that I've heard of some friends who are Black saying that a lot of things that happened during their childhood and growing up, they didn't think about, but then now they've got this time to reflect. They've been like, actually that did happen. Has this given you any time to think about things like that? Or you still just kind of, you know, it's just not part of your thinking process?
I mean, I guess I've always kind of known they were there. I'm not sure, like, for me, I just never viewed them. They did. It was more like my parents, and maybe they did happen to me. And again, I was just unaware, but I never felt like it was malicious, maybe just like misinformed. So I don't dig too deep into it. Cause like, okay, like I'm gonna give people the benefit of the doubt. If I felt like it was malicious, I would probably just have the conversation with the person. Be like, let me explain this to you.
Do you feel like you've always had the confidence to do stuff like that, to have conversations with people on difficult topics, whereas most people might shy away?
I think it's, I think we can work through difficult topics if you're not defensive or, you know, just like firm in what you believe and unwilling to budge, but you can point out a different perspective. And if you kind of approach it as a conversation versus an attack and go like, oh, this is why I feel this way, and this is where I'm coming from. And then maybe you gain a perspective that you just were like, I didn't even see it from your point. Like, this makes sense too. And you both walk away with a little bit more knowledge. I don't think tough conversations have to feel like a tax. And when you look at them like this is an educational opportunity, it doesn't seem that scary to me.
So you don't need to do all this work right now to help yourself to be open-minded and to listen to other people, because apparently you naturally have this down. We need more like you, people like you having conversations, and that's just really impressive.
No, I mean, I don't think I have it all figured out. I'm sure there's, again, I think it's just like knowing that we don't know everything, right? Huh. And then once you can agree to that, you go, okay, like I can be open to any conversation because it's just an opportunity to learn a little bit more. And it's just being willing to learn, I think.
Yeah, but that's part of the problem. I've been working so hard on not like jump, like be thinking what I'm going to say back to people. And I love that you've got that kind of, you do that anyway, and you are open-minded and I'm in it. Like we do need more approaches like you, and hopefully people can hear this and say, well, if she can do it and she believes in that, then I can too. And speaking about women next, you know, you've moved the needle for women in running in a lot of ways, but what are things that you would like to see in the future moving forward with regards to advancing women in running?
Yeah. I mean, thank you. I hope that I have in a small way, but, I know how important it is to just have those role models and the people who pave the way. Like I think about where I'm at, and it's because of the Dinas and the Joanies, and then you keep rolling that back, Bobby Gibb, Catherine Switzer. And then I'm sure they had the people who did it for them. And so it's just those examples. And I think that's what we need more of. And I would love to, you know, see more women involved in coaching, in the administrative side of the sport, in the World Marathon Majors, at the World Athletics, higher up levels, just to have those people who are the example where you go, okay, like there's a job for me here. This is something I can do. This is, something I can be a part of. And then it doesn't seem so strange when you see the person there. It's like, oh yeah, of course. Like this is where I want to go next.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And was there one of those in particular that you remember early in your days of running, of looking up to and just having as a key person for you?
It was always Dina. Yeah, she was just like so great in on the course and on the track. And, you know, she was a fantastic runner, but she just had a level-headedness to her, and her longevity kind of proves that she was doing it in this sustainable way. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the thing, like, don't ever meet your heroes, 'cause you'll be so disappointed. And then you meet Dina and you're like, nope, mm-hmm. This is like, it's everything you expected. So, she's just been fantastic. And, you know, even coming up in the marathon, it was like, oh, let me tell you how to get better. Let me help you out. Or what can I do for you? You know, she wasn't a person who was like, this is mine. So yeah, I think she's just been a great role model for our generation.
All right, friends, time to tell you about our Black-owned business of the week. And I am so excited to share this one with you because it is just amazing and just empowering in so many ways. So today I want to tell you about It's Glitz Girls, which is a Black-owned business by Kenzie and Kaya, who are these two young girls who have created this business of clothing that is for preteens, for teens, and for young adults. They have these tie-dye clothes with just cute little phrases on them, like inspire her and sprinter, made to love, long jumper, these all kinds of, if your kid is into track or into running, they're going to love these, like track queen and trust the process. They're all tie-dye shirts. They've got like tanks and they are just gorgeous little things. And they're made by Kenzie and Kaya, who are these soccer players. And they also just so fun to look at. You may have seen Colleen Quigley sharing about them. The clothing, because she loves them as well. But these girls are just wonderful and I'm so excited to share about them. So you can go to itsglitz.com, which is ITZGLITZ, itsglitz.com, to go check out their clothing, to go get yourself some stuff, get your children some stuff. And things are selling out, so be sure to go get something. I really love it and I think you will too. So itsglitz.com.
And then it's like the thing, like, don't ever meet your heroes because you'll be so disappointed. And then you meet Dina and you're like, nope, this is like, it's everything you expected. So she's just been fantastic. And, you know, even coming up in the marathon, it was like, oh, let me tell you how to get better. Let me help you out. Or what can I do for you? You know, she wasn't a person who was like, this is mine. So, yeah, I think she's just been a great role model for our generation.
Yeah, she's such a special person for sure. Thank you. And then to wrap up here, we're going to do some fun questions. I don't normally do stuff like this, but I figure people can get to know you in a different way. So just a few here. First, well, this isn't, I guess, a fun question, but just in general, favorite book of the year? Have you read a book that you've really enjoyed?
Oh, goodness. I've read a ton this year. You know that as soon as you ask, though, everything falls out of your memory.
Yes.
I haven't read any books ever. gosh. I liked The Liars Club by Mary Carr. It's not a very fun book, but it's very well written. And some of the descriptions are just fantastic, even though they're sad.
What kind of book is it?
It's a memoir. It's just a strange upbringing. Her family was just bonkers and she survived it all. But
because 2020 wasn't dark enough for you, you needed some more.
That's right. It's like, but she made it through. How did she do it?
Yeah, there you go. So there's a silver lining that 2020 is now coming to an end, and she can make it through. We can too. All right. Crunchy or smooth peanut butter?
Smooth.
Smooth. Do you like crunchy at all?
I don't mind it. I just don't like textures in something that's supposed to be smooth. Like a jelly, it needs to be like smooth. I should not find a chunk. Because then I'm like, is that a piece of strawberry or did something get in there? So smooth all the way.
Nice. Okay. Well, and in America, you can do that. When I'm in England, we don't have jelly. Well, jelly is what you call jello. But yeah, so at least over here, I've got used to jelly being what it is, whereas we call it jam. So I think jelly is a thing in the US, so we can let you go with that. Okay. If you had to give up coffee or bourbon, what would you give up?
Bourbon, because there's still beer and wine and everyone needs coffee.
Okay, that's true. Good answer there. Do you actually like to color, as Brooks had these coloring sheets of you?
I don't mind it. I did have to go buy pencils for it, so I'm not an avid colorer.
You went to buy, did you color yourself in?
I did, yeah. I posted some pictures. I was very impressed with the people who really dug the coloring, and they would post these like very, I was like, oh, that's like, you're like an artist. And throw mine out away. I crumpled it up and threw it out.
I'm sure you did great, but yeah, I'm sure people took it very, very seriously. So that's pretty cool though, that they took the time to make sure they put thought into the way they wanted to color you. Did anyone color you in a strange color, like make you blue or anything?
Definitely. There was some very cute little kid ones. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any adults made me blue, but that is kind of funny. Like it's obviously the rainy Boston and it was cold. So
that's true. Blue would have been the right color. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. And I just have a few questions from people in my community, many of which I've actually asked already and done some of them. But someone would like to know, what is your average easy pace when you're doing your recovery runs?
Probably 7:15, 7:20.
Okay. All right. That's still pretty fast, even for me. You've mentioned Dina. Who is another favorite runner of yours?
Oh, there's so many great runners. Love Emma Coburn, Jenny Simpson. The Boss Hard group is just, they're so fun and really good people. Emily Sisson, Molly Huddle. I could go on for a long time. So
I know there
look
are
at the
a lot
women's
of people.
Side.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Women's distance runners are fantastic.
Yes. And then a random one from John, who wants to know, what are your thoughts on Matt Hart's book, When at All Costs? Have you read that?
I got it.
Win at All Costs, maybe, is it? Or When at All Costs?
Yeah.
Has he typed that wrong?
Win at All Costs.
Win at All Costs. Okay. It says when here.
When it, that's funny. It's probably like an autocorrect.
Yeah.
I bought it. I've skimmed it. I think it reads a lot like the New York Times article. So I haven't really dug into it too deep because I'm like, I've read the Times article, but it's on my list. I will get into it. Right now, it kind of strikes me as stuff I already knew.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, fair enough.
Not super surprised by it.
Yeah. And then what podcasts do you listen to? You do not have any pressure as you're talking to me.
I won't mention any running podcasts, but I really like The Moment by Brian Koppelman, I believe it is, mm-hmm. who is the writer of the show Billions. So he has creative people on, a lot of writers, a lot of musicians, and he just kind of talks about the creative process. It's pretty good.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we will wrap it up there. Although I did have one more thing for you. So I told you I lived in Michigan and you were also living in Michigan. And then I was in Kentucky and then you started something in Kentucky. So now I'm in St. Louis. So are you going to start working with the Cardinals or something? I feel like somehow you're following me around with your adventures in life. Do you have any plans to do anything in St. Louis?
What's some good recommendations? Because I could be talked into it, but I need to hear what the good side of St. Louis. Tell me on it, and then I'll stalk you.
Well, I actually can't give you too much because I moved here 12 weeks pregnant, and I was just dead to the world. And then the pandemic hit. So I haven't really actually done much, but there's this really unique kind of pizza called Emo's Pizza, and it has this specific kind of cheese, and it's a pizza unlike anything else. I've really enjoyed that. There's gooey, ooey gooey butter cake, which you may have had that somewhere. That's very popular here. And apparently the Cardinals, the St. Louis baseball team, which I again haven't done. So I'm not sure I'm the best person to pitch it. So, but I guess I'm just waiting to see how your life somehow ends up here, because when you ended up in near where I lived in Kentucky, I was like, this is weird, because not many people, I liked Lexington, but not many people came to Lexington. So it was very strange to see you there. all right. Des, anything else? Oh yeah. Were you going to say anything else?
No, St. Louis is home of lawnmower beers, so maybe I'll stop by for a lawnmower beer. And I believe home of, if I'm not mistaken, Edward Jones's office. So
don't know that.
My retirement.
There you go. You could come see the Clydesdales as well. They are definitely here. The Budweiser Clydesdales. anything else you would tell people just about getting through this tough time as people, so many people look up to you and take your advice for gospel? Anything else you'd like to remind them with how tough this year has been?
Yeah, never take my advice for gospel, step one. but I think there's an upside in everything, right? I think it's really how we view it and wrap our minds around it and what we decide to make out of it. And, you know, I think figure out what you can do in this year that you couldn't before and make it a positive thing. Like I would never do Run Destober before the New York City Marathon, but it was so fun. I loved it. I've spent way more time with my family and my dogs than ever before. My Chesapeake Bay Retriever is 11 years old, and it's cool, 'cause I got like this whole year with him, and you know, he's not going to be there forever. So I'm appreciating that, and just look for those silver linings and embrace them, and we'll be back to normal soon. And then you'll go, oh, I wish I had. So get in front of those now, so you don't go, man, I wish I had used the time to do X, Y, Z.
That's good. Great advice. All right. Thank you so much. I will put lots of links in the show notes with places to find you. I won't make you say those all again, but thank you so much. I appreciate you and all you have done.
Thanks for having me.
Before we end this episode, I just want to take a moment to shout out my podcast editor, Jeremy Nessel, who has done such a wonderful job of looking after my podcast, taking out all the mishaps in the episodes, while still keeping in the vulnerability and the realness and the rawness of the conversation. This is not one of those podcasts where I take out the ums and the uhs and the sometimes the delay in words, because I think it's very important to keep that authenticity. We're surrounded by perfected and manicured everything. And I think it's really important that Running for Real stays that way. So thank you to Jeremy for your work. I also want to thank Maria Vargas and Amber Moore, who are also part of my team. They've been a big part of this community and me being able to build this brand. So just want to give them a shout out too. All right, let's get right back to the end of this episode. She really is awesome. I wasn't sure what to expect. I had heard Des on a lot of, well, I haven't heard her on that many interviews, but I'd heard of Des on some podcasts and I wasn't sure how it was going to be being this far into this podcast, having not spoken to her before. Sometimes it can be hard to get to know people within the space of 1 hour, but I really enjoyed that. And I felt that she was very open and honest and we had a good conversation that was unique and she had fun. So I think it was great. And I hope you felt the same way. Now, I just want to remind you to go back and listen to that Rich Roll episode on Friday if you didn't already, especially if you enjoyed this one today. A lot of not similar questions, but the same thread of conversation, I would say. And if you enjoyed this style with Des, you're probably going to enjoy that version with Rich, especially seeing as he does very few interviews. That was a real win for me to go get that. So I think if you do enjoy Rich Roll in any way, that's a good one to listen to. And then I said at the beginning about Orin J. So for that episode, be sure to subscribe so you can check that one out on Friday. That one is really going to help you navigate relationships, particularly if there are opposing opinions in the coming months. So that one is coming out on Friday, Orin J. So far, he is a meditation expert. He's a relationships expert. That's what he teaches in his course on 10% Happier, my favorite course on the whole app. So yeah, be sure to subscribe to check that one out. And I just want to take a moment to thank my sponsors for this episode, which are Generation UCAN. I want to thank UCAN for just being there for me. You can get yourself 25% off using code TINAMUA25. If you are a returning customer, you can use TINAUCAN15 to get 15% off. I love the cookies and cream protein powder and I love the chocolate peanut butter bars. Have them every single day. I love them so much. And I also want to give a shout out once again to It's Glitz Girls. Go check that out. So, so good. So cute. And if you have young girls in your life, this will be perfect for you. All right, my friends, I will see you on Friday. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Running for Real podcast. Be sure to check out TINAMUA.com for show notes and even more helpful running information.